are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test.
Oh, my God, it's early.
Is it early or is it late? Hey, welcome aboard the Amy Beth Arkley Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Special evening edition of Music and Musings. We will enjoy some great music, some under-the-radar tunes, some old favorites, too. Check out our free-flow pop culture convo, inspiration to action, challenge success story shout-out, and get you in the mix, too, if you're listening live. It is Wednesday evening, May 13th, 5:30 out west, 7:30 central, 8:30 here in the east, number in motion 347-857-4505. Don't forget about our 24/7 Twitter feed at AB Wright, so if you're listening on podcasts, you can weigh in on anything and everything whenever you want to. The show today being brought to you in part by PopNet, arts, culture, and conversation on air, online, 24/7. It's the new improved PopNet. Also by City Mobile. You can shop from almost anywhere with City Mobile. So today you're going to need a very intriguing indie folk rock duo. They've got an intriguing sound, reminiscent of Civil War's Damien Rice, but really when you put it together, it's all their own. We'll meet March to May in just a couple of moments. First, though, they'll talk to us about their inspirations, their aspirations, and their collaboration, but let's hear one of their songs from their just-released debut collection, The Water's Edge. Here's Embers. It's March to May, opening up a special evening edition of the Amy Beth Arkley Show.
And it fades away.
your face.
Elegance in the sounds of March to May, the song Embers from their debut collection, The Water's Edge. Delighted to welcome Beth and Darren to the show. Congratulations, guys. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us on the show.
Oh, pleasure to have you here. So let's talk a little bit about how you got together. You met a couple of times, I think I read in your bio, a couple of chance encounters, and something finally clicked, and you just decided to work together. How did it go, Beth? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we met in a kind of funny way. I had lived in Washington, D.C. before I moved out to Seattle. And when I was moving out here, I needed a place to live. And Darren's house just happened to have an opening. And so we were complete strangers at this point. Like, we did not know each other at all until we became housemates, actually. And then didn't, like, got along really well, but didn't really think much of it until we were traveling with some friends a couple of weeks after I moved in, just in some mutual friends. And we were out on the Washington coast, and Darren was playing his guitar and singing one of his songs. And it was kind of in the evening, and, like, around a campfire, and, like, people were drinking wine, and very relaxed, very festive night. And so I didn't think very much of it, but I started harmonizing with him. And I think it was kind of this moment for both of us of, like, this is interesting.
Did each of you know that the other one was a musician, or no?
No, actually. So I knew that Darren was a musician, but he didn't know that I was one.
He didn't know. So wait, was it a big revelation for you, Darren, when you heard Beth harmonize with you, and you said, "Wow, this is something we should really pursue"? Or
yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know. It was over a couple of glasses of wine around a bonfire, but it was definitely one of those kind of moments of you know, recognition and inspiration, yeah. For sure.
Never underestimate the power of wine and a campfire, I guess. Talk about, you know, the meetings of the minds with two people. As you said, you didn't really know each other. You got to know each other. And how did your musical taste and style and passions kind of mesh? Because you have a very interesting sound. And how does it work now with the collaboration? You know, it's interesting for two people coming from different backgrounds. What were your initial inspirations, and do you share a lot in common, or did you share a lot in common in terms of your likes and inspirations?
Yeah, you know, I think we both, Beth might have mentioned before, have a pretty wide diversity of musical tastes. You know, I mean, not just folk, but also, you know, I don't know, rock and country and indie and reggae and electronica, and, you know, you kind of all over the board. Some of our favorite artists come from all these different genres. And, you know, we definitely have quite a few artists in common in terms of, you know, I think our musical background. But it was just one of those things where, you know, some of the songs I'd written before, some of the songs that she had written before, you know, without even planning on it, in a sense, had a very similar sound. And, it just led to a very natural progression into songwriting and collaborating together.
So it was meant to be. How did you set out? I mean, this is an interesting world that we live in now, the indie movement. On the one hand, there are a lot of opportunities for people to get out there and get their music into the world. On the other hand, it's very competitive because there's so many people trying to vie for attention. How did you decide to go out and get your first gigs and get together to, I know you crowdfunded, I think, or started to do that to help you get your first release. Talk a little bit about, you know, what goes into the whole creative process and getting yourself out there into the world.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I think we both had to think about this question a lot recently, especially with the album coming out, about sort of how we want to manage our careers now. It's pretty interesting because I do, to piggyback a little bit off of what you said about sort of there being so much more opportunity but also so much more competition, I think that I like to focus on the opportunity side of it and things that, yes, there's a lot more responsibility on every individual artist now to kind of be creative in how you manage your career. There isn't as much sort of a set path to follow to be successful in this industry. You make your own success, and that can look wildly different from one artist to the next. There's no real roadmap to follow. But ultimately, I think that just sort of learning as much as you can, being smart about sort of if you have a limited amount of sort of time and money, how do you invest that? How do you ask for help? These are big questions we've had to ask, especially you mentioned our Kickstarter last year. I think that was a big lesson for both of us.
Tell us, how did that go?
It went really well. We overfunded by about 130%, so it did very nicely. Yeah. And I think it was just an interesting lesson in sort of asking people for help and sort of letting ourselves go a little bit and trusting that this community of friends, family, and followers and just random strangers who happened on our page and liked our music, that they were there to catch us, and they were.
I'm sure your family and friends and you will enjoy it when you have many more fans helping you and followers helping you as opposed to friends and family. That's great to get you started, but you really want to get to the larger public, which you're obviously doing as right now. And feeling, seeing that you have a growing following. Did it start with you first playing around and different clubs in the Washington area, and then trying to broaden your scope beyond that? I mean, how did you have a strategic plan, or did you just start, happenstance playing in various local places and then just see where it leads? I mean, I'm just wondering, because I know a lot of people are curious about how to embark on a creative career. Darren, go ahead.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, kind of more on the latter of what you said there. I actually run a concert production company here in Seattle as well, and so I was already making a lot of really good connections with venues and musicians and stuff like that. And we just started. We never played an open mic. We just kind of jumped into booking shows, and we had a friend early on do a really amazing demo for us that helped us get shows. And I would say our success rate for booking shows is, people we contacted is really high, probably, 70-80% of the places we contacted, wanted us to play, and I think they, it's both a combination of our sound and, the kind of actual instrumentation into the harp and the vocal, vocal harmonies. And, so we played a lot of shows in the surrounding Puget Sound area, in our first year.
Yeah, and you do have a very unique, interesting, it's an intriguing sound, you can get pulled into it, and I'm sure that helps you stand out. As we said, you want to create a sound for yourself, and you want to have a lot of repeat customers, and you want to have people, be excited about your music, and I'm sure that's already happening for you. Where do you see it now? I mean, you have the album just came out, right, fairly recently?
Yep.
What's the next step?
So next steps for us right now are, first of all, promoting the album as much as we can. We're going to be taking it on the road and going on a short tour through Oregon and Washington and probably down into California over the 4th of July weekend and sort of that early July period. Then we'll be taking it to the East Coast in the fall. So really pushing on the promotion and touring front. And then we're also in the midst of recording a music video for Georgia, one of the singles off the album.
Wow, that's great. Now, tell me a little bit about the recording versus performing live. Do you have a preference? Do you like one over the other, or both for different reasons?
I'll answer maybe one half of the question, I'll answer the question for my half. I think I almost prefer performing live than recording in the studio. I think both of us are pretty well over, any kind of stage fright that we had, in the earlier days. And it's just really fun because we get to interact with our audience and with each other on stage, and it's just a really fun performance.
The energy.
The
energy from the crowd, yeah. Talk about, did you have stage fright, Beth? Because I know one of the famous stories from Ray LaMontagne, who used to perform, he was so had so much stage fright, he would perform with his back to the audience. I mean, did you go through something like that?
Oh, wow. I don't think I was that extreme. I grew up seeing choirs and in a cappella groups and just group situations. So I wasn't necessarily afraid of performing, but I had never done it by myself before, and I had never done it on a harp before. I played harp sort of as background music in places before, but I'd never thought about playing it in the way that I'm playing it now or anything like that. So it was a new experience to me. And I remember my first couple of shows, I felt very exposed for sure. It was definitely nerve-wracking, but I think you settle into a rhythm around it, and so I think I would agree with Darren, and that I think I'm mostly over my stage fright. But it is funny because I started thinking about shows and stuff like this as an exchange, and that like we're giving music, and the audience is giving something back to us with their attention, and it feels very mutual. And once I start sort of looking for that and looking for the people in the crowd who are really paying attention and really sort of really like what they're hearing or just open and listening, I find them in the crowd and then I sing to them.
Yeah. Well, there's an exchange of energy, and every performance is different. It's like theater experience, the same thing. You know, you're performing, and that is, this is performance. It's a very unique thing that you're never going to re-experience again, which is a fascinating, great way of looking at it. Let's talk a little bit about that harp. I mean, it's such a, you know, pronounced feature in your music, but as you said, you didn't really think about it, but whose idea was it to incorporate it and make it really part of the centerpiece of your sound?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, so the other half of the story of how Darren and I started playing together is that, so we had that moment on the Washington coast where we started singing together, but I had not really been playing my harp very much for the last couple of years because I'd been living on the East Coast, and just traveling with the harp was, at that point when I wasn't right. playing professionally, was not the easiest thing. So I hadn't played for a while, and I got my harp brought to Seattle. My parents brought it to Seattle for me. And so I started playing it, and I was just tuning and playing upstairs one day and just playing. I thought I was alone in the house. And I started hearing these really interesting overtones to what I was playing. And it took me a moment before I realized that it wasn't an overtone in the harp, which, I mean, there are a lot of overtones in harp music, but what I was hearing was Darren playing his guitar really softly in the hallway outside. And I think that was another sort of significant moment for both of us where we were like, hey, you know, neither of us had really thought about this combination before, or like putting the two instruments together in a way that could have songwriting potential. But as soon as we started doing it, it felt totally natural and like very obvious. I'm not sure how we missed it.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Talk about now, do you write songs together, or do you write them separately and then, you know, just decide, you know, the Lennon and McCartney thing where you put your both names on it, but one person really writes it, or do you actually sit down and write together?
The large majority, we definitely write together. You know, there's an occasional song where, you know, I might write, you know, most of the lyrics or most of the, you know, guitar melody parts or vice versa, and then we'll come together and finish at the last little bit, but majority of our songs, we kind of hash out, you know, line by line and, you know, just, you know, both lyrically and melodically. And, that, you know, I think that's kind of our preferred way now of writing.
What comes first usually? Is it usually the lyrics or the melody?
Good question. And actually, I would love to hear what other musicians take on this too. But for us, it's actually the chord progression first on the harp or the guitar. You know, one of us will start, you know, find some little fun progression that we really like and, you know, and the rhythm and everything. And then we'll actually go into just singing, you know, a melody, kind of making up a melody with made up words. And then, you know, we often will get the whole structure in place without having any lyrics at all in terms of like the verse and the chorus and the breaks and everything. And then we'll finally add lyrics at the end.
So the music informs the lyrics somehow, that inspires you to come up with whatever the storyline or the poetry line is going to be in the song. That's interesting.
Exactly.
Interesting. So what's the big picture wish list for the career? Do you have one, or do you just want to see how it plays out?
Oh, absolutely. I think we definitely have sort of pie in the sky wishes, but also like pretty concrete goals in terms of where we want to be touring in the next year or so, what kind of placements we want to pursue. Excuse me?
So what are some of those concrete
oh,
goals?
Yeah. Well, again, I mentioned we're doing a little West Coast tour and a little East Coast tour. I think we'd really like to sorry, Darren, go ahead. We do have plans to take our act international at the end of this year or beginning of next year. So, yeah, and we're starting to work with sort of looking
at
this.
Where are you going to go?
UK first, and probably France and Spain as well.
Where, Spain?
Mm-hmm.
France and
Spain. France
and Spain. Okay, I didn't get that yet. Okay, you kind of drifted there for a second. I can definitely see you making inroads in the UK. Ireland, I think, would be a good fit for you guys. I think.
Yeah, we've heard that a couple times, and it's definitely
High
on our radar.
I can see that. But how about some of these like festivals, like Newport festivals?
Yes,
Bonnaroo,
absolutely.
You
hit the nail on the head. That's actually. Darren and I meet pretty regularly to sort of do the strategic planning and the business aspect of our music as well, and that's festivals are on the agenda for tonight. So, especially, I think we're a little bit late for the summer festival run this year because we were focusing on promoting the album, but we're already starting to look towards next year and be targeted in where we want to play.
Now, how does that work? I mean, just for folks who are, you know, we have a lot of creative folks and aspiring artists and active artists to listen to the show. I mean, what goes into it in terms of being able to book yourself into one of these high prestigious festivals? I mean, how do you do it? How do you go about it? You would know, Darren, you run this kind of a company and you're...
Darren, do you want to take that?
What goes into it?
Yeah, definitely so. A large part of it, especially for the larger festivals, I mean, you know, like, for the smaller venues, you know, it's something that a lot of aspiring artists can do on their own. You know, they can book smaller venues, and, you know, like when they're touring or in their own city, or contacting, you know, some local organizations like my organization, you know, that books, you know, both local and touring artists. However, for larger festivals and larger venues, you know, artists really need a team. You know, they need a manager, they need a booking agent, they need potentially a label. You know, they really have to have a team of folks, you know, publicists that are working together and have the credibility, because these bigger venues and festivals won't really listen, you know, to this unknown artist. But if there's a connection there, you know, if there's a band that's playing the festival and, you know, let's say we know that band, they can potentially help get us into the festival, right? Okay. So it's so much about networking and connections.
Got it. And have you opened for anybody big yet, or is that what you're working on as well?
We are working on that as well. You know, it's funny because I feel like we've had to wait until we have a tangible CD, you know, something we can actually really get out there to the world before we can do a lot of this. And as of 2 weeks ago, we have one.
You got it. Yeah, that's your calling card, absolutely. So would you have anything, I mean, would you like to reveal some of your wish list of people that you would like to open for or play with?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. Somebody or a couple of people that we definitely would like to play with sooner are Anthony D'Amato out of Brooklyn, Liz Longley out of Nashville. We have played with Jen Vanals out of Nashville before, and we'd love to keep playing with her. On a bigger scale, oh my gosh, if we could play with Damon Rice or Mercado Irglova or any of those amazing people, that would be just a dream.
And I was going to say, unfortunately, two other acts that we would love to play for, two, you know, very inspiring groups that have inspired us a lot and no longer are playing together, this fall season of the Civil Wars. So unfortunately, that one's probably not going to happen.
Well, you never know. Didn't they break up and then get back together and then break up again? So you never know.
This is true.
You never know. Well, I wish you the best. You're at the beginning of something pretty special, I think, and you have a lot of enthusiasm, and you have your calling card now, so I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more from you. Give us a setup. We have one more song to play called Falling Down. What's the impetus behind this one and inspiration, et cetera?
Yeah, so this song actually was like one of our earlier songs, and it came from, I guess, mostly, you know, it was inspired by someone that I had actually had a short-lived relationship with a few years ago. And, you know, it's just one of those moments where you, or one of those experiences where you meet someone and you really connect with them, and, you know, things start really going, you know, moving quickly, and, you know, maybe even hitting that road of falling, you know, falling in love with someone. And then something happens, you know, a conversation where we just realized that it wasn't either person's fault, but, you know, it just wasn't going to work out because of something that we couldn't overcome.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of that lost love, that kind of bittersweetness of someone that, you know, you see that potential with, and it's not going to happen.
That's a universal theme.
Yeah.
Oh, before we go, I have to ask you, where did the name March to May come from?
Oh, yeah. So March to May has two major meanings. First of all, we really liked just sort of the sound of it, and it felt like it fit. But So March was the month in which we sort of took ourselves away on a little songwriting retreat just to see if we could write songs together. This is the very, very beginning of us knowing each other and sort of feeling that connection. It was kind of a leap of faith to go away and see, like, could we come out with anything? And we actually did. One of the songs that came out of that retreat, that very first endeavor, was Embers, which we played earlier. So that was our beginning, and then May was the month that we decided that we were going to really sort of take this seriously and move forward as a duo. So March to May is our formative period, and then additionally, Darren's born in March and I'm born in May. So they're our birthday months too.
Perfect. Perfect. And March to May also, it's marchtomay.com is your website. People can find your album, The Water's Edge, there, and information, I'm assuming, on tour, upcoming tour dates and where you're going to be playing and everything else. Which is the beauty of the social media deal now. People can get right in touch with you. And I hope you have great success and keep doing what you're doing. Obviously, you love it. And keep making great music that people will fall in love with. This one's called Falling Down. Beth, Darren, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you come back and see us again.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
All right. Here's Falling Down from March to May on the Amy Beth Erkwi Show. falling down. March to May on the Amy Beth Arkley Show. Thanks again going out to Darren and Beth. Find out more about their music, upcoming tours, and, of course, you can buy their brand-new collection, The Water's Edge, at marchtomay.com. Support them. I think they're going to have a bright future. And on their wish list to open for or play with, collaborate with, the great Irish singer-songwriter Damien Rice, who kind of took a hiatus for a while, but he's back in business. And if you listen to this song, you'll see how they kind of go together nicely. It's the classic, The Blower's Daughter, Damien Rice on the Amy Beth Arkley Show.
And so it is, just like you said it would be. Life goes easy on me. Most of the time, and so it is. Shorter story, no love, no glory. Hero in her sky. I can't take my eyes off of you. I can't take my eyes off of you. I can't take my eyes off of you. Can't take my eyes off of you. I can't take my eyes off of you. I can't take my eyes. And so it is, just like you said it should be. We'll both forget the breeze. Most of the time. And so it is. I
can't take my mind. My mind. My mind. Till I find somebody new.
That was lovely.
Sometimes I feel like a preacher, convinced of my call, trying to convert you to love, sweet redemption, in spite of your recent fall. I'm known to be truly relentless in a good fight. You've been the devil's day.
another night at the palace. There is nothing else to do. Oh, oh, the same people, the same drinks and the same music, the same quicksand. I think this harbor town is wasted band. Say goodbye. Hello, city. You found an enemy in me.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Hello, city.
Hello, city.
Hello, city. Second night at the warehouse, and my mock turtleneck just freaked.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
From the liquor room up to the change room to the doom and gloom of the hotel room, I think this seaside beer hall should sink into the bay. Hello, city. You found an enemy.
Titled debut collection, Gordon. It just happened to come out that way, but it wasn't meant to be their title. Also, Lorraine Devon Wilkie, remember her? The author and singer-songwriter, one of our guests on the show not too long ago. I think singer-songwriter is her strong suit, and she's got a great album out called Somewhere Along the Way. That song, Believer, is on it. Also, Damien Rice, the beauty, the Blower's Daughter, and March to May, our guest today. And their song Falling Down from their debut collection, The Water's Edge. Find out more at their website, marchtomay.com. On the nighttime Twitter feed, one of our heartier regulars, Nixie, chiming in earlier, said, won't be able to listen tonight, but we'll catch the podcast and can't wait to talk Mad Men on Friday. Yeah, we're going to talk all about our speculation for the final episode. By the way, the Mad Men marathon just started this evening. It will run all the way through Sunday night's finale. Hard to say it. Hard to see it happen, right? And I saw the first episode earlier this evening before our show, and wow, you know, it was a while ago that I had seen it, and it is fascinating, and I can see in my head after last week's penultimate episode how it's going to all come together. And I've gotten so finely tuned in my mind of how it's going to happen that if it doesn't work out the way, I'm going to be gravely disappointed, but we'll see. We'll talk about it on Friday and then again next Tuesday, our post-mortem wrap-up, but a fascinating show. There's imperfections everywhere and flaws, but it is so brilliant, and the character development as a writer, I can just say, is just so brilliant and so rich and detailed. It's just fascinating and really worth watching and rewatching. And if you haven't seen it or you missed any of the episodes or want to see them again, the marathon is going on, so set your DVRs and all of that good stuff. And we will talk more about it as we get closer to the end and following the end, because we want to rehash if we were right, wrong, or disappointed, and going through withdrawals, all of that coming up in the near future, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending how you look at it. I know. Other folks in the Twitter feed, Philly's chiming in, love the nighttime music. You should do a nighttime show anymore in the offing. Well, no, Philly. Frankly, I don't think so. You never know. We might. We've done some weekend shows, and things seem to be working so far. Drudy and Aurora are here in the booth with us. We'll see. But no guarantees on that one. We're usually Tuesdays and Fridays at noon, but you never know. We try to accommodate when we can. It is a different kind of feel in the nighttime. I used to do an evening show years ago on the radio, terrestrial radio waves. It has a definitely different feel than I did a morning show. I think I've done every possible shift, they call it, or show. And there's a different vibe each day part, that's for sure. And the evening is a different kind of feeling. But it's just a question of scheduling and all that good stuff. But indeed, we'll have some fun. Jill on the Twitter feed says, really like the music you're playing, March to May Good, but they're kind of subdued, anything rockier. Well, you know what, Jill? Get their EP and find out. Their collection, The Water's Edge, you can get it at their website, marchtomay.com, and find out more about it. There you go. See, I'm a good chill. I am a good chill. Hey, you know what? Let's talk about the news. This is nighttime kind of news, too, in the crime world. George Zimmerman back in the news got into a road rage altercation with a guy apparently that he knows. So far, no charges, as usual. They're either charges are never filed or they're filed and they drop them. But this guy, the former neighborhood watch captain who was acquitted in the killing of Trayvon Martin, unarmed black teenager, has been in one scrape after another since the acquittal. It's usually domestic violence with a girlfriend or his ex-wife, or it's some altercation with somebody on the street. Usually firearms are involved, and this is a guy who's a ticking time bomb. And, I mean, you got to get him off the street. I'm just afraid when he finally gets behind bars, it'll be because he actually hurt somebody in a very severe way. I think his family has got to intervene and get this guy some psychiatric help. He needs a lot of help. There's no question about it. I saw the other day Nancy Grace, God love her, she had this character, Frank Taffy, back on the show. You remember Frank Taffy, our justice junkies, who surfaced as his big, George Zimmerman's big defender, on the Nancy Grace show and apparently on other HLN shows at the time, until he got booted off when people found out what this guy was all about. He's an ex-con himself, a convicted felon. He's been on a series of neo-Nazi radio shows spewing all kinds of hate, misogynistic junk. You could tell he's sexist to the hilt when he makes comments about all these women who are gold diggers, etc. So they booted him off. He disappeared from HLN when all this stuff surfaced, but because months have gone by, she's resurrected him. So, Nancy, get a clue. This guy is not worthy of coming on the show, except he provides great entertainment value because he continues to spew George Zimmerman's, you know, great defense of this guy who is out of control, spiraling out of control. But even Frank Taffy admitted that this guy has got problems and he hasn't dealt with the aftermath of actually killing somebody, regardless of whether he's acquitted or not, regardless of whether he keeps saying it's God's will, etc. He's a ticking time bomb, and his family is not helping him by letting him run around armed without getting any kind of counseling. He needs help. That's all there is to it. And he better get it, or he's going to wind up back behind bars. Unfortunately, someone else is going to be hurt if that happens. Really sick. Speaking of sick stuff in the news, I don't know if you saw this documentary. It's fascinating on a variety of levels. It's called Thought Crimes, Going Inside the Cannibal Cop. Remember that story? Really sleazy story about this former police officer in New York City who was arrested, convicted, then they threw out the conviction of attempted kidnapping and conspiracy to commit kidnapping because he went on these fetish websites and fantasized, talked about his fantasies of kidnapping, killing, and then eating various women, including his wife, now ex-wife, and an ex-girlfriend. Now, he was convicted, according to the jury, because there was a conspiracy he talked about with other people on this websites, I guess there were several, that he wanted to go kidnap this old college friend of his, and he actually did seek her out. He found information using police databases. He was convicted of that, which became a misdemeanor, using police databases for his own, you know, purient motivations. But he, you know, staked her out. He visited her and made plans, etc. Now, he says it was just a fantasy. He never intended to act on it. So it's very interesting. It's creepy. The guy is definitely creepy, but then you're saying, well, if he didn't really do anything, it's just a fantasy that he's sharing with people, how is that a crime? How is that different than Stephen King writing, you know, horror stories? Well, for one thing, you're using real people. So if you just fictionalize it, nobody would be able to convict him on that. But it is kind of creepy, and it really has, like, these, you know, echoes of Philip K. Dick in Minority Report, where you're going to start seeing into somebody's head what they're going to do and then intercept it and prevent them from doing it. You know, really, anybody, we all have dark thoughts. Hopefully most of us don't have cannibalistic thoughts and murdering and that kind of thing, but you're allowed to have bad thoughts, I thought, right? So it's kind of scary as a writer, certainly. I mean, I haven't written about that per se, but you do write about murders. Do you, you know, but it's fiction. You know, that's the point. These were fantasies that were very elaborate and using real people, real names, real places, that sort of thing. He's still in limbo because the government is trying to appeal that decision and prosecute him again. I'm not even sure how that works. How do you do that if, that seems like double jeopardy would be part of it. It's a fascinating documentary, though. It's called Thought Crimes. They debuted at the Tribeca Film Festival a couple months ago, I think. It's now on HBO. Look for it, find it. It's something to think about for sure. It's creepy. It's a nighttime kind of subject. But in the meantime, if you're in the underworld, you're on the run, you're on the lam, you might want to send out a SOS for lawyers, guns, and money. Here's a great late Warren Zevon.
But there's a lot more to his story, believe me.
Thank you. Remember, you're fighting for this woman's honor, which is probably more than she ever did.
I can hardly bear the sight of lipstick on the cigarettes there in the ashtray. Lying cold the way you left them, but at least your lips caressed them while you passed. Or the lip ring on a half-filled cup of coffee that you fought and didn't drink. But at least you thought you wanted it. That's so much more than I can say for me. What a good year for the roses. Many blooms still linger there. But long could stand another mowing. Funny, I don't even care. As you said, you walked away. As the dark land you closed in. The only thing I have to say, it's been a good year for the roses. After 3-4 years of marriage, the first time that you haven't made the bed. I guess the reason we're not talking, there's so little left to say we haven't said. While a million thoughts go racing through my mind, I find I haven't said a word. From the bedroom, the familiar sound, I want baby's crying goes unheard. But what a good year for the roses. Many blooms still linger there. Long could stand another moment. Funny, I don't even care. As it turns to walk, dark lines you closed in. The only thing I have to say, it's been a good year for the roses.
Yeah, good year for the roses. Haven't heard that beauty from Elvis Costello in a while. On the A.B. Beth Arkley Show, a couple of dark nighttime tunes, Cowboy Junkies, Murder in the Trailer Park Tonight, and the legendary Warren Zevon's classic, Send Lawyers, Guns, and Money. Someone should send a note to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Warren Zevon deserves a posthumous entry, don't you think? Yeah, the Twitter feed of Buzz at A.B. Wright's, phone line 2347-857-4505 on our special Wednesday evening edition of the show. Lots of folks chiming in about George Zimmerman. Tommy says it's lock him up, throw away the key time for George Zimmerman. Alicia says it's going to end badly. Either he'll kill himself, someone will kill him, or he'll kill someone and wind up in prison for the rest of his life. I hope not. I really hope it's not going to be any of those things, but especially that last choice. Help him, people. He needs help. And Clint sent me a link to the Perez Hilton piece that I guess shows various celebrities tweeting about Zimmerman the last couple of days, and here are some of the standouts. Andy Cohn from Bravo says George Zimmerman is the lowest of the low, the worst of the worst. Make him go away. Amy Schumer, George Zimmerman and Robert Durst just have the worst luck, right? Rob Thomas, George Zimmerman was just shot in a road rage incident. I guess the other guy felt threatened and stood his ground. Oh, the irony. Someone, Arsenio Hall retweeted, said, after countless run-ins with the law, I wonder if anyone will ever call George Zimmerman a thug. Arsenio's response, Obama might. Well, I've called him a thug. I mean, with the whole issue of thug being bad word affiliated, like, with the N-word. I don't know. Thug always seems like it could be anybody. It doesn't have anything to do with race. It's just a street tough, or very often someone who's affiliated with a gang or the mafia, that kind of thing. And certainly somebody like George Zimmerman could be classified as a thug, I think, in the old-fashioned sense of the word. I don't know. It's crazy. Montel Williams, George Zimmerman is incapable of avoiding gun incidents. It's really amazing to me. Dan Savage, George Zimmerman would seem to be the common denominator. Yeah, well, for sure. He's got problems. There's no question about it. And as I said, he needs to have help. I mean, he needs intervention from his family. Step up, people. I don't know. You know, during the time that they were waiting on the federal investigation before the DOJ came down and said they're not going to press charges against him federally, they waited in limbo for a while, and the whole family seemed to get paranoid. His father was saying some strange things. They were supposedly, you know, stashing ammo and guns. They were just very paranoid at this point. You know, I think this guy had issues before the whole Trayvon Martin business, unfortunate, I shouldn't say business, the death of this young boy, and then the trial, and of course he was a target, and he got threats, I'm sure. I'm not saying any of that is right. I can't condone any of that. But I don't think arming yourself to the teeth and running around with guns and driving around in a big car and getting into altercations with girlfriends and strangers is really the answer. Take the guns away. He should be in some kind of a hospital for a while. He really, I think, needs psychiatric help. I mean, it's either that or he's going to wind up in prison again, I'm afraid, as Alicia pointed out. And as I said earlier, I just think it's a disaster waiting to happen. The guy needs help. I hope his family is chilled out enough or there's somebody there, a lawyer, a friend, not enabling him with the idea that, yes, George, you're doing the right thing. Yes, George, keep walking around with guns. Yes, George, you can't be yes and Georgian. You can't be doing that anymore. You've got to get him help. That's really what it amounts to, I think. Otherwise, we're going to be looking at a real disaster, for sure. Hey, thanks so much for joining us here on the Amy Beth Arquie Show, the nighttime edition. It's Wednesday evening. Still a few minutes left here at AB Wright's. Phone line 347-857-4505. Friday show back at noon. Again, we'll do the Madman speculation business. And we're also going to meet a new up-and-coming, another great music show. I think you're going to love this guy, Billy Grimaw. He's a new indie folk rock poppy sound. He's got a real catchy sound to his music, so we'll celebrate with him, and we'll also do some other Freeform Friday things, free flow pop culture convo, and some great music along the way as well. Join us on Friday live at noon, and of course all the shows are archived for podcast, so if you miss any, want to hear them again, you can follow the Amy Beth Arquie Show at the Blog Talk Radio site. Episodes available there, also at iTunes, NetNow, and the website amybetharquie.com. That's also the place to stop by for creativity coaching questions. Become a guest on the show or peruse my stories, The Eliza Gordon Mysteries, both Killing Time and Dead Silent, available for ebook and paperback via Cozy Cat Press. Find out more at the website, amybetharquie.com. And the Inspiration to Action Challenge success stories keep pouring in. Want to say hi to Brandon, who joins us from Brooklyn, New York. Says he's working on an art installation project and also doing some writing. I got refocused, he says, and started to take my own voice seriously, honing it, working it, and getting better every day, I hope. Well, thank you, Brandon. I hope so, too. I'm sure you are, because it's the doing that will make you better and better and more confident, for sure. So good luck to you. Congratulations, and thanks for chiming in. If it's working for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out. If it's not, and you need a little help along the way, we can do some creativity coaching conversations. First one is always on me. Reach out to the website, amybetharquie.com. If you want a conversation, just give me a week or two to get hooked up with you, and we will do it. Indeed, we will. Speaking of great artists that we have debuted on this show about a year or so ago, close to 2 years now, I think, we met Caroline Rose, an up-and-coming singer-songwriter with a very distinct sound, and here's one of her tunes. This is what living feels like on the Amy Beth Arquie Show.
it, put my name on it, and I'll stand where everybody's hip. Honey, I guess so, I'm out, I want the cowboy to lead me in some honky-tonk dive, a juke joint jive, like Homer's Cornhusker, red one, baby, two left turns off Highway 61. I'm keeping this road hot until she drops back top in the back, my finest bottom of the sky, drive down in the valley, feeling all right.
Of too much too soon or too little too late.
While the worst and the worst that it gets. Oh, you can just
judge the whole world on the sparkle that you think it lacks. Yes, you can stare into the abyss, but it's staring right back.
Find out more about their debut collection, The Water's Edge, at their website, marchtomay.com. Intriguing discussion with Beth and Darren, too. Appreciate it. Hey, thanks so much for all the nighttime tweets. If you missed the show, want to hear it again, don't forget all the shows are archived for podcast. You can get them at the Blog Talk Radio site, iTunes, NetNow, and, of course, at the website, amybetharkawi.com. Appreciate it. And appreciate the help from Trudy and Aurora working late in the booth, ML at TCS headquarters. It's going to be a free form Friday. Don't forget to join us for Billy Grima, great music and conversation. And, yeah, we'll talk more Mad Men for sure as we interrupt our marathon viewing for a show. It's going to be a tough weekend. I'm going to be watching it a lot, I think. Yeah, don't forget, you can also friend me on Facebook. We'll give you updates on the Radio Graffiti page. Boy, a lot of theory is coming in on that page. We'll talk about that on Friday regarding Mad Men. And David Letterman, too, is leaving next week. Ooh, a lot of withdrawal for the TV junkies amongst us. And, hey, thanks to Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at TCS headquarters, for keeping us moving. Friend me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at AB Writes. Follow Trudy, our producer, at Radio Trudy.
Well, I guess this is it, old pal.
It sure is. What?
The end.
Ooh.
Not quite.
Goodbye, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show.
Well, unless we're fired, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart. Goodbye.
Hey, I hope you drive safe, play a nice dream dig. Please come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. I'm driving out of here. Uh-oh. And there's a baby driver behind the wheel. Leave you with Simon and Garfunkel. Take care.
Dark green, more than music, coming in my ears, in my ears.
Well, my love comes tumbling down, as Solomon Burke said. If you need me,